It's the second week of Lent, this period of waiting for Easter, for death to be turned into life. And I've got to say, the waiting feels a bit heavy this year. Our world is filled with so much war and violence. Afghanistan, Yemen, Syria, Palestine, of course, the Ukraine, which is dominating the news so much, and so many places that don't get the same spotlight. And in our own country, violence against women is still a significant problem. International Women's Day was yesterday, and it celebrates women and also reminds us of how far we still have to go. And the effects of climate change, they don't feel so far off. Just before I joined you this morning, I was on the phone to a friend of mine in Lismore, and there the effects of climate change are very, very real. And while COVID may not always be on top of the news cycles, it's by no means left us despite our wishes. And so we come this Lent longing for the darkest places in our world, our country, our cities, and our own hearts to be transformed, to see light. And for some of us, we feel it this Lent more than many previous ones. Which is why Luke's story of the transfiguration stuck out at me, as did parts of the Philippians and the Psalms. And so Luke's story is the one I'll be focusing on today. And so what does this story of transfiguration, this transforming and shiny, shiny Jesus, this dazzling Jesus, have to do with us? Us who are scared of climate change, war, and all the things that we see happening. And so two main things stood out for me, and then I'll have a little concluding thought. And I'll get to those 2 points in a moment. But first, I want to take us back to this Lucan story and to what transfiguration means. For those of us who've hung around churches for a while, it is a familiar tale. Transfiguration means a complete change of form or appearance into a more beautiful or spiritual state. It's quite a vague term. In this case, Jesus is transformed from regular old Jesus into one whose face somehow changes and whose clothes are a dazzling, dazzling white. And he's joined by two heroes of the faith, Moses and Elijah, as well. If the Bible was a TV show, and we were quite a few episodes in by this sort of section of it, we would be gasping in awe and delight at this surprise reappearance of two such major earlier characters. It's an odd and kind of miraculous and wonderful story. And so as we hold this story in the tension with the messiness of our lives and of the world, what on earth might it have to say to us? How can such a strange story of Jesus and ancient prophets and awed disciples speak to us who are so far away, culturally, geographically, and experience-wise? Which leads me to the first of my 2 points. The two things that stood out to me as I wrestled with this strange text in preparation for speaking with you today. And the first point is, or the first thing that stood out is God's glory. Yes, Tish, you might be thinking. Of course God is filled with glory. Think of the songs and the Bible verses. Glory to God in the highest. If anyone has glory, Tish, it's God. This is not a brilliant point. And you are right. But I wonder if some of us are more comfortable with a more human and earthy Jesus, a more relatable one. Jesus, a kind of dirty carpenter son, probably a bit dusty. Jesus hanging out with fishermen and maybe smelling a bit like fish too. Jesus hanging out with the sick and the outcast. Not Jesus hanging out with great prophets on a mountaintop shining like the sun. Perhaps we find Jesus, a God present in the ordinary and mundane, more comfortable. Not this shiny, shiny Jesus. And I fully believe that God is present in the smallest of actions and moments. That God is more present in the mundane than we can ever imagine. When my church was on Zoom, I led them through a reflection on leaves. We all grabbed a leaf each, whether it's from our garden or from a walk we'd taken with the dog that morning, or a houseplant that happened, poor houseplant that happened to be nearby, or some kale, spinach or lettuce from the fridge. We all gathered with a leaf. And we focused on noticing little things about it, from the veins, the way it felt and the way it smelt. A moment of stillness and peace with something as simple as a leaf. And I did that because I believe that God is in everything giving life, in the smallest of leaves. But here we have Jesus filled with glory, shining so bright that he's transfigured and changed. And Peter, James and John are just filled with awe. They get a glimpse of this glory, of this beauty, of this brightness of God. And the psalmist that we listened to earlier as well begs God not to hide God's face. And here is God's face in this passage. And in Luke 9:22, just a few verses earlier than the reading we had today, Jesus predicted his own death. And so I think this vision of God's glory, this blatant display of it, is maybe meant to reassure and encourage the disciples that this man you are following towards who knows what, but he did just predict his own death, is filled with God's light, with God's glory. This man, Jesus, meets with the very prophets that you have heard about from the temple and from your family since before you were born. Jesus here is so bright that his light is noticeable and awe-inspiring and shines on others. And they too are transformed to have new hope, courage, and wonder at a God who can transform things so beautifully, at a God who can make all things new. And so that's my first point. The very obvious, God has glory. And that here in this passage, God shows some of God's glory. And it's spectacular and literally shines. And I don't think God does it to show off, but to inspire and encourage the disciples that are following Jesus. And I think even us. For as the psalmist says in chapter 27, verse 1, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Or at the end of the psalmist finished with, "Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage." And here in this Luke story, God does not turn God's face away, and God gives courage and light and hope to Peter, James, and John. God reveals God's face, reminding us that even on the road to death, there is light. And point two, which is a bit shorter than point one, you might be glad to know. Sometimes I think we want to focus on the pretty bright light, but we can't stay there. That's point two, and I will explain it. In Luke 9:33, the disciples want to make shelters or huts or tents or dwellings, depending on the translation that you read, for Elijah, for Moses and Jesus. They want to really stay in that moment, in this glorious moment of prophets who were meant to be dead and of brightness. The men were leaving, but the disciples are like, "Hey, hey, hold up, hold up. Can we build you some huts? Can we stay here?" I think at least part of the disciples want to veil themselves off from what Jesus had said was coming. They'd much rather build some nice huts and stay on the mountain. Thank you very much. And who can blame them? I think I'd probably want to do the same thing. Who wouldn't want to sit down with Moses and Elijah and Jesus while they're shining and sit in some nice dwellings? They see God's splendor, but they can't seem to understand or perhaps can't accept that a God capable of so much splendor is going to suffer and die. They don't yet grasp that death is necessary for resurrection. And often we don't either, or we don't want to. Sometimes, like moths to a flame, we just want to stare at the pretty light, at shiny, shiny Jesus. We want to ignore the darkness. We want to skip straight to resurrection and joy of Easter Sunday. And it's pretty natural to want that. But I think it's our acceptance of suffering and death that allows us to be fully present in the world and with people, with both the delights of the world and also all of its sorrows and messiness. In the COVID pandemic, which I'm sure has made it into many a sermon illustration, we've seen a lot of light focusing happening. We want to be on the other side so badly that sometimes, on that bright, shiny other side, that sometimes we pretend we're already there. We think maybe if we just act like it, maybe it will be true. But then we miss processing our own feelings. We miss what those around us are actually going through. We miss important moments of life. And so that's point two, that while we might want to stay in the shiny, shiny moment, we need to come down from the mountain into the valleys and through them, reflecting the light that we've seen. So to conclude it and sort of bring it all together, if I can. I think that perhaps the best way forward for us is to hold that vision of God, of Jesus filled with glory. And our visions might not look the same. They might be that vision, or it might be those glorious moments with loved ones, family, friends, pets. All sorts of beautiful God glory moments. It may be the hope of something new, we hold these glorious moments and we need to resist the urge to pitch tents at them and never leave. Rather, we hold them so that we may also step into the world, but not be paralyzed by what is happening. We hold them so that they can encourage us and give us hope. And we step into suffering because we know that there is light. We know that darkness is not the end of the story. And so we step into the valley, we step into Lent, knowing that there is more to come and that the story is not yet over.